Hi guys, welcome to We Earn Media. I'm so excited to be here today. We've got two industry veterans in the food and wine industry, which I'm really excited to get into. They're two friends, more on how I got to know them momentarily, but first we'll get started with introducing them. We have Kara Newman. She's an award-winning writer, author, recipe developer, and editor. She's focused on food, drink, and travel, and is the writer at large and spirit reviewer for Wine Enthusiast magazine. She's also a freelance writer with works featured in Afar, Bloomberg, Fodder's Travel, and Food and Wine, just to name a few. So hi, Kara. Good having you.
Hello.
And then Amanda. Hi. Amanda's a freelance writer in the beverage industry, also a consultant. Let me start that over. Amanda, hello. Amanda Schuster is a freelance writer and beverage industry consultant based in Brooklyn. Her work has been featured in Liquor.com, Savor, Inside Hook, Bloomberg, The Whiskey Wash, Distiller.com, and many others. She's also a trained sommelier and the author of three books, her latest being Signature Cocktails. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Of course.
Glad to be here.
Good. Yeah, thank you for taking the time. So I came across Kara first on social media. Specifically, you were talking about the missed opportunity that restaurants have with not having any sort of social media presence and how that can be challenging, A, to not get press, but also to work and collaborate with reporters. And it kind of piqued my interest a little bit. So listeners, I reached out to Kara, asked if that's something that she would want to talk about. And then you had mentioned Amanda, saying that Amanda would also probably have a ton of interesting stories and basically pet peeves that we can kind of get into, which we're like big fans of pet peeves here. I think while we try to, you know, keep things positive, I think we can learn a lot about the annoying things that we do. So I think that's going to be kind of fun. But yeah, so two guests. We've only done this one time ever, but I really liked that episode. It was back when COVID first hit the scene. We had basically an episode with a publicist and a journalist coming together and talking about what it was like, you know, right when it happened. And there was a lot of interesting conversation. So maybe that'll happen here. We'll see. But yeah. So we'll kind of get started. We'll start with you, Kara. Can you tell me a little bit more about your current role and what you kind of, I kind of talked about it a little bit, but can you kind of give a quick summary of like what your day-to-day looks like at Wine Enthusiast?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm a freelance writer, and at Wine Enthusiast, I review spirits, where I'm also writer at large, meaning that I also write features and front of book items and digital items. So things that are long lead, things that are short lead, things that are bottle focused and not bottle focused. And then I also write a column these days for Bloomberg's Top Shelf newsletter, where I cover everything except whiskey. And I write for a bunch of other publications too. So my days are pitching, writing, dealing with editors, trying not to get too mired in the swirling eddy that is my my email inbox.
Do you get a lot of emails?
Too many. So many. Oh my God. It's like a dumpster fire. Yes.
Oh, how exciting.
Oh gosh. Dumpster fire. I can relate.
A useful so dumpster fire, but a dumpster fire nevertheless.
Are you not an inbox zero kind of person?
Never. I'm like an inbox 3000.
All right. Perfect.
Real anxiety Same. To see all the unread emails. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but it's organized chaos, I'm sure. You know how it works. That's all that needs to matter.
Do you drink a lot of whiskey?
Sure. I drink a lot of everything in moderation, of course, but
yeah.
I'm a generalist in a specialist world. You know, it's sort of, you know, the food world is very, very big. The spirits and cocktail world is a bit of a smaller piece, but I'm not someone who focuses exclusively on, say, whiskey, though I do enjoy it. I kind of go across the entire spirit spectrum.
Very cool. So Amanda, tell us a little bit more about what your day-to-day looks like.
I mean, I don't have one particular publication anymore. I used to be the editor-in-chief of an outfit called Alcohol Professor, so I could relate to a lot of what Kara was just describing. But now it's more, it's really all freelance. And it's been an interesting time because Kara was talking about long lead and short lead, and a lot of what's happening now is short lead with very long leads. So for example, it's something that you really only have a few weeks to think about, but the editors are taking longer and longer to process things, even pitches from writers. So it's been a really weird time. I'm finding that it's quite different than it was a couple of years ago. And I had taken some time away from the regular editorial world to write my last book, which was just really intense. And I took what some people call a book leave. And when I left, I've been telling people it's been like, okay, everything's a Jenga tower, and then you're taking your block out of the Jenga tower, and then you have to put it back in again, and all the other blocks have shifted.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
I have a question about the short lead and long lead. Can you explain what that is exactly? The differences there? For people who just don't use those terms.
Right. Kara, do you want to explain, or do you want me to... Or what I interpret.
Sure. I mean, what I think of as short lead, it's just a matter of how brief the time frame is from when I get an assignment to when I have to turn it in. So short lead could be anywhere from hours and days to, and that's usually like a quick digital turnaround, to long lead. I mean, I'll sometimes be pitching stuff for Winding Thesis fully a year in advance.
Yeah.
Wow, a year in advance. That's a very long lead then, I'd imagine. So you're saying that you see more short lead opportunities? This might just be...
For the most part, I do. I mean, every once in a while, there's something that's going to be, you know, take some rumination or a lot of research. But for the most part, it's like, okay, we need a roundup of... I mean, most recently, a roundup of the oldest restaurants in New York City by category kind of thing. And even though it took a while to process, it was still considered short lead because it's something that's never going to change. And it's not like I had to go on a field assignment for this or anything.
Got it. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So how did you
get confused with actual pets? Sorry.
Oh, hey, pet. Jasper. Hey.
Hi, Jasper.
So cute.
Oh, so
I thought you said pet as in pet peeve, and I was like, oh, we're going into pet peeves already, and I wasn't looking at the camera. Like, that was so cute.
Play on words. That's yeah. Very cute. So Kara knows Jasper. How does Kara know Amanda? How long have you guys known each other?
We met at Tails, right?
Had to be. It's where everybody meets.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Tales of the Cocktail. It's a very intense cocktail conference held in New Orleans every summer.
Oh, a spot for one of those.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly when we first met, but I just know that Amanda's a fixture in the cocktail world, and I feel like I've just sort of always known her for as long as I've been in this business.
Very cool. Would you say that, like, publicists, do you ever meet, like, publicists at that kind of conference, or is it just kind of whoever?
Cool. All the time, yeah. It's really very much a meeting ground for both publicists and media and enthusiasts. Well, not so much enthusiasts anymore. It used to be that there were a lot of consumers who attended that event, and I feel like it's more inside baseball than it used to be.
Mm.
But brands are a very big part of that ecosystem. And so, yeah, there's a lot of publicists, a lot of brand activations. I hate that word so much, but, you know,
yeah.
As long as we're just diving right in. But
that's okay.
PR is a big, big part of that. It's a big part of our world in general.
And what does brand activation mean for our listeners?
Oh, it just means it's a planned event. I think a PR rep would probably give you a much better explanation, but from my point of view, it's an event that's planned around a specific brand. So, you know, there's a brand X old fashioned whiskey tasting room. Mm-hmm. And it does tend to be rather aggressively branded.
Yes.
Are they pretty effective, you think, in getting their name out there and getting to try the product?
Annoyingly so, yes.
Great. So how else do you guys work with PR professionals? Like, how do they impact your work?
Can I have a very specific question, actually.
Oh, yeah, do it.
So do you receive a lot of products, like, you know, alcohol products to try from PRs? How does that work in your world? Okay. Yes. I'll be completely honest. I've never worked for a liquor or, like, you know, have very few opportunities to work for a product, like representing a product. Same. But I get this question a lot. Like, how should we send product? Who do we send it to? Where do we send it? So it's a question that I know our listeners are going to hope we ask. So I hope you don't mind if we talk about that real fast.
No, not at all.
Okay, cool. Tell us about that and how you like to receive products or if you don't.
I like to receive products when I've requested them. If I receive a pitch and it seems like it's going to be relevant to something I'm either working on or I know I will work on at some point, I definitely want to try that product so that I could speak most effectively on it and also feel comfortable recommending it or not. It does bother me if I just receive things that I didn't request and they just show up, especially when I don't really know the context. So that can, and because, and there are quite a few things that do end up that way. And it's like, what? Sometimes the packaging is very elaborate too. Like I live in a brownstone up a couple of flights of stairs. And sometimes I get packages that weigh more than 20 pounds.
Oh yeah. Wow.
And I mean, that's insane. So
I get a lot of bottles. I rely on PR for bottles. I get so many of them. And I appreciate them. I just don't appreciate when I get those, you know, just circling back follow-ups to say, you know, when you're writing about it, when you're covering it. It's like, I don't know if I can. If I haven't asked for it, I might not at all. But again, back to the pet peeves. But the ones that are solicited, they're tremendously appreciated. And I do rely on PR reps for that, for those products, for access, for information that that these products are coming out. I mean, I appreciate those heads up too.
Would it be safe to say that it's preferred for a PR person to mention this new product or this new drink via email or however they're communicating with you, and then, like you said, ask if you'd like to try it out and then send it? Or just overall, do you like those surprises? It sounds like both of you have different opinions on this, but.
Well, I think neither of us like the surprise too much. I think both of us would agree that we, you know, if we know that something, we would prefer to be pitched and then decide whether or not it's something we want to cover or taste for possible coverage later on, rather than something just kind of showing up. Because then otherwise so many things would show up.
Yeah, yeah, no, that makes sense. I'd imagine
chaos, and I mean, I work from home, and so they're just. I don't want my apartment to turn into, you know.
You have the party spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a little more flexible. I don't mind a surprise now and again, and sometimes the only way to get something in front of me, because I get such tonnage sometimes, is just to. Just to actually get the bottle in front of me, and then eventually I'll see it, think about it, get to it.
Where do they find your addresses?
Well, I put my address online. I rent office space. I don't like getting bottles at home. It's not good for my sanity or my marriage. Mm-hmm. So I deliberately rent office space, and that address is posted on my website, is posted on Wine Enthusiast's website as well. I'm easy to find.
Okay. Awesome. That's another question that people always ask. Do I send it to maybe Food and Wine, like the headquarters address, or like where do I find their details? And I'm like, well, it's different for every person, I'd imagine. So that's good to know. Okay, cool. So I just wanted to get in the weeds about that because it's a questions that I had personally. I'm going back to our list of questions, though. I think I took us off track a bit.
Oh, you're good. I kind of have a question related to what you asked as well. It's like, how do you ultimately decide what you are going to cover and what you do want to try?
I mean, sometimes it's simply a question of I'm reviewing something. I mean, like Kara, I write a lot of reviews for distiller.com, as Kara does with Wine Enthusiast. And so it's not necessarily thematic. It's just I'm reviewing products as they are released, or I'm helping fill in some of the blanks for things that might have been missed in the system that they want to have updated. They have both expert reviews and consumer reviews, and they want to have as many expert reviews as possible. I'm considered one of the experts, so I write a lot of that stuff. But then also, aside from that, editorially, you know, sometimes, yeah, I mean, and Kara does this too, where it's like, okay, I'm writing about this one subject. I'm covering all rye whiskey or something. And then, you know, I want to be tasting different ones. I mean, I wrote something for Inside Hook last autumn, which was really fun, where I was trying different kinds of whiskey with as a control group in a highball, in the same highball with the same soda, and tasting how each of these interacted with the carbonation.
Hmm.
So sometimes I'm a scientist. Things like that. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Wine Enthusiast has a calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find our buying guide on the Wine Enthusiast website, and then you know exactly which categories are coming up and which to send. Awesome. Like right now, I'm soliciting for Grappa reviews. So very Italian cool. Grappa, good to know.
Oh, that's so good to know. That's really helpful.
And you said that you all plan about a year in advance in some cases. Is that typical?
Yes.
For the entire? Okay.
Hmm.
Good to know.
Yeah, those
are the entire 2024 calendar goes up at once. So if you wanted to, you could plan out your entire submissions for the entire year.
Great. Yeah, we spoke with somebody who was in the store brands space. So very, very niche, but it seems like a lot of these niche publications work off of editorial calendars, which can be nice. Very different than the PR background that Brit and I have, but it is interesting, the planning ahead kind of thing. I could see that being really nice. Cool.
I have a trend question. Have you two noticed an increase in non-alcoholic beverages and mocktails?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay. I was just curious. I know I've read a lot about how it's a big thing right now, and cool. Okay.
How else do you research trends in your space? Like, how do you determine beyond obviously thematically what you're covering, like something like knowing that mocktails are trendy right now? Do you look at social media or other types of tools to kind of help determine that and be ahead of the
coverage? It's a mix of pitches and social media and reading other other articles. I mean, there are a lot of brands that are kind of always in the conversation that we've known about from the very beginning, and then emerging ones that are popping up, and it's great to know about them for sure.
It's also a matter, I think, of getting out there and trying to see for yourself what's going on, which is, I mean, another way we interact with PR pros. You know, they invite us to events, to new bars and restaurants, and that's a helpful kind of access to have as well.
Yeah. You beat me to it, Kara. I was just about to ask about events and how you all feel about those. What's your preferred way to be invited? Just can you tell us more about how you approach going to events that you're invited to?
Speaking of like long lead and short lead, I mean, one of the things that's been frustrating lately is that I feel as though I have a week planned out, and then all of a sudden I get an invite for something, maybe just a couple of days, a few days in advance, instead of a couple of weeks in advance. And it's frustrating because it may be something I want to attend, but then it's like, oh, well, I can't be in two places at once. And how do you make these decisions? And so one of the things I would really prefer is to know, I think, farther in advance and be able to sort of plan ahead so that I can you know, that plan out my week, because there are some things that are, you know, not to miss, because either it's the only way to taste something or the only way to greet someone affiliated with the brand in some way. Let's say there's a master distiller visiting from Scotland and it's the only couple of days he's going to be in New York, you know, or she's going to be in New York. And so it would be like, it would be good to be present for that. But then what if I already said I was going to be somewhere else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Long lead time to when the event is going to be, basically, is one really key takeaway there from you then.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wish there were a central calendar. I don't know that that would even be possible. At one time, I think somebody might have started keeping a calendar of events, but I don't think it's even possible in today's day and age.
These are typically invite only, right?
I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Good question.
These are typically invite only, correct?
Yes.
Typically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you care if they're large events? Do you prefer more intimate ones? How do you feel about that?
Depends.
Depends. Okay.
There was
I prefer smaller ones.
Yeah.
But it depends. I mean, sometimes it's the only way.
I don't like to be overwhelmed with a sea of people. And also then you can't really effectively have a conversation surrounding the person or product or happening that's being celebrated. But yeah, I mean, also it's nice just to be able to, I like the smaller events where you can have a conversation with everybody there. Round table sort of discussions is always really helpful, I think.
Okay, cool. How do you two feel about desk sides? So
hate them.
You hate them? Okay.
I refuse them. I don't.
I'm in my house.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Would you like to be my assistant?
I should rephrase this, actually. How do you feel about virtual desk sides? I guess there is a difference, but is that a yes or no? I didn't catch your...
That was only a no.
Down. Nope.
Okay, that was a thumbs down. Okay.
Nope.
That's good to know. For me personally, if I were maybe given the opportunity to represent like a beer, maybe a whiskey company, let's just say, one idea I might have is to send that product. Well, first ask a journalist like you two, if you would like to receive a sample, send it, but also offer up a virtual desk side with maybe a cocktail, an actual cocktail expert, a bartender, where you could both kind of, he or she could talk about ways to make a cocktail with that whiskey. Kind of like, what is it called? I've done this before, actually. A company that my husband used to work for, it was like a team building event where this bartender got on camera and showed us all how to make whiskey sours. And I thought it was the coolest thing. It also was during the pandemic. I had nothing going on.
How to make them.
So well, not a whiskey sour,
a
but
different story.
Yeah.
Whole of the world.
Sure.
That's true.
But you know
already
I mean,
are the
Amanda
experts on.
Right. We've both written cocktail books. We know how to make cocktails.
Yeah.
It's a different thing if you're going to a bar and a professional bartender is making them. You're trying to get a sense of the ambiance or the vibe of a place. But I don't need to be a captive audience for someone's
That's good to know.
Hand. Yeah. No. It boils down to is this authentic? Is this useful? Are you telling me something new?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
I don't need to be... I'm about to get very, very cynical. I'm pulling.
No, by all means, you're not going
really
to offend me at all.
Oh, I like cynical. Yes, keep it going. I mean that.
It's a good use of your expert's time, your bartender's time, but it's not always a good use of my time. That's why I don't really like the desk sides. I find them distracting, and it's not good for my schedule. It's not good for the articles that I work on. If I need something, I'll come to you. I'll find you.
Yep. Agreed.
Now, so desk side, I'm assuming, is where you're virtually at your desk and there's somebody talking to you about a thing, kind of like a marketing event, but through
they happen in person too.
Okay. They're,
yeah. I think it was a big thing before the pandemic, especially. I could be wrong about that, but then they became virtual desk sides became popular post-pandemic, I believe.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. We kind of talked a little bit about that, Britt, with the Trey Bodge episode, right?
Yeah, we talked about it with her and somebody else, somebody who worked for in the fashion industry might be. It's been so long.
Yeah, I guess it's a very different industry, though. It seems like with food and wine, it's like, I kind of get what you guys were saying about, like, you already know how to make the cocktails. It's kind of a distraction from the reality of it, is that if you're trying to review a product, you just need to have access to that product and really, like, study it. Or if you're reviewing a restaurant or food, you need to be there in person to understand it. Because if somebody's reading your work, they're trusting you that you're translating that experience for themselves, right? They're not receiving the item by sitting at their computers and having a bartender talk at them. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's like not really translatable, I think, to what you guys are trying to do exactly.
I mean, there are times definitely when it's beneficial to have a conversation with the maker of something, the owner of something, somebody representing the brand from their perspective, or to get a historical reference or additional information, but that's not always necessary. And it can't always be included in the article as well. There's just, you know, so much space, a lot of word budget. And so that just isn't always appropriate for absolutely every single thing. And so sometimes it's expected. It's like, okay, we're presenting this thing and now we have to have this hour long or 2 hour long, sometimes even meeting about, you know, what it is you're tasting. And no, we don't actually, let me taste it and then I'll get back to you. Or let me figure out if I'm even going to cover it in this way.
Yeah.
Besides taste of the product, what else do you take into consideration? Anything specific?
Well, is there a story?
Yeah.
Social media following? I don't
know. Authenticity.
Oh, you said their story? Okay. Authenticity? Okay. So like a mission behind the product or really just the story or both?
Just the overarching story. I mean, okay. To give you a for example, I very rarely do single product stories in general. It needs to be really compelling. But when Sazerac rolled out a new cognac, this was probably, I think, about 9 months ago, it had a really compelling backstory about, it was a great tie-in to, it was a product that was engineered to taste like a pre-phylloxera cognac. And that was... I just picked up a really technical term I probably shouldn't have for this.
I know. I'm just like, what does that mean? But okay.
It was before a very specific pest disease wiped out a particular grape region that was used to, and the grapes were used to make cognac. And so here was an opportunity to potentially try something that tasted like a cognac that you couldn't have tasted for centuries, not just decades,
cool.
But centuries.
That's neat.
Right.
Okay. That's exciting.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Okay. And a story like that really got me jazzed, and I pitched it, and an editor at Bloomberg picked it up, and it became, a really interesting story. It went into Bloomberg Business Week, one of the few stories I placed there. And, I mean, that's an example of a story that's exciting. And, I mean, you're saying you don't know what it is, but you just learned a few things. You're potentially excited to try it.
Yeah,
I mean, if I can get a consumer excited about it, awesome. That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
That's the kind of story I look for.
Nice.
I love that. What other kinds of stories are you looking to cover? Like just anything that is interesting? I know we've got like the editorial calendar we can reference, but like what's been impressed? Like, what do you want out of a story?
I mean, kind of what Cara was saying, if there's a historical tie that has some relevance to something that's happening in the world right now, or I mean, one of the things I think that is getting really old is focusing on an ethnic group, focusing on a gender, focusing on a movement rather than something that, you know, for face value is valuable in some way. You know, oh, this is a black owned brand, so you should cover it, or this is a woman owned brand, or this is a, you know, this is the first. I mean, I think it's more interesting if it's the first of something, not a thing that, you know, we've done before, but it's the first of its kind in some, you know, really amazing historical way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that we see that in other industries too. It's just somebody gets by with an angle and then it just gets beat to death to the point. It's like they missed the point to begin with, I think, of why that mattered, why that story mattered, and kind of looking forward. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Kind of curious about more of your pet peeves before we kind of start to wrap things up, because I know that we talked a little bit about events not being invited soon or like more in advance. We talked about what else did we talk about? Desk signs. We've talked about getting samples and things in the mail that you didn't ask for and it piling up. Maybe you're not even sure you're going to cover it and getting a lot of incessant follow-ups about it. Are there other things that you kind of have been top of mind that you wish publicists would stop doing?
Well, I mean, one of the things is it really irks me when I receive a pitch for something and there isn't enough information in the pitch that I can use, or there isn't a link to a photograph that can be used for editorial purposes. There isn't, we don't know how much it costs or if it's a spirit or wine, you know, what the how much alcohol is in it, the percentage of alcohol, just very important. Basic bits of information about the product that aren't in the press release for some reason, or aren't in the pitch for some reason, or the pitch is missing a vital detail. There was something that happened a couple of weeks ago where, you know, somebody had pitched something to me and it sounded cool and I started writing about it and they said, well, you missed this thing. I'm like, well, it wasn't in the pitch. You didn't tell me.
Oh, come on.
I didn't miss it at all. I didn't have that information at my fingertips and I should have.
So Amanda covered not having enough information about product. So cost, ABV, and then also not including photos for editorial, which we know is should be horizontal and high res. But I'm wondering if you have any that are top of mind, Kara, in terms of pet peeves.
Oh God, how much time do you have?
Well, technically we have 15 more minutes.
Let's start the interview over.
No.
But yeah, you know, if you want to take 10 minutes, it's fine.
We can have you back on. Kara's pet peeves, episode 72.
I have so many. Let's see. Some of the things that are on my mind these days. I mean, Amanda mentioned photos. Let's see. It kind of makes me nuts when I can't get photos. If I get pitched to do something, if I get pitched recipes and at the last minute, like, well, we don't have any kind of photos. Like, did it just catch you off guard? Were you not planning to actually give me any kind of images, and they sort of scramble to do it. It's like, okay, all right, we'll try. Or another thing that's kind of on my mind these days is embargoes. We get a lot of those.
Thank you.
And this is kind of a pain point right now where I'll literally save an email with an interesting, maybe it's an interesting product, maybe it's not, and it says, by reading this email, you agree to, you know, honor the embargo. Like, no, I don't. As a matter of fact, I don't. And you can't. This seems unenforceable somehow, but that doesn't stop, you know, PR reps from sending these anyway. And in my mind, anyhow, an embargo is something that, you know, basically flags me that somebody else has the exclusive on that. And you're just sort of tying our hands until, you know, until whoever, journalist X, actually gets their story out.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of this new trend. It's like, no, I don't know when this started, but no.
Good to know.
And sometimes I'll get a pitch the day before the embargo for the very first time. It's like, it's embargoed until, you know, it's March 12th and it's embargoed until the 13th. And I'm like, really? What? Why?
Why even say embargo? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. How do you have enough time to work with that at all?
Yeah.
That's frustrating. How do you two feel about exclusives?
I mean, I like when they come to me, but I don't have use for them too often.
Okay. Same. Okay, cool. Yeah, I didn't even think about that in the food and wine space. So I'm glad this came up. All right. Any other pet peeves?
Yeah.
Things to air. Oh, we always say we're kind of like therapists.
I would say that you should definitely proofread everything before it goes out. I mean, I don't know how you feel about four-letter words on this We don't do it? Okay.
No, no, we love it. We don't mind.
We don't mind this really.
Okay. I mean, I can't tell you, every now and then you'll get something like there's an attachment with a menu update and it'll say, it'll literally be titled as new shit. It's like, well, I don't think your client would really want you to send it out that way. I know that's how the bartenders talk, but it's like, yeah, no, I don't think so. Or I remember one of my favorites was I got an invitation to a wine diner. I was like, wow, you know, a wine dinner is cool, but a wine diner might be a really good idea. Someone make a wine diner.
I mean, that sounds awesome.
I think you would find this ridiculous, but one of my goals, we're having a Love is Blind watch party. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I don't know why the diner comment made me think of this, but I'm out to find the Love is wine by Cupcake. And actually, that is my goal at the end of the workday, is to go and find this wine.
Okay.
It's going to be terrible, I know, but it's, in my opinion, just genius marketing.
I can't stand thing right now that's happening. I've gotten a lot of invitations for girl this and girl that. In fact, there was one that combined my two least favorite phrases in marketing right now. It had both girl dinner and girl boss.
Mm-hmm. Girl math. Ugh. Yeah, I know.
Girl
it's
everything. Also girl terrible. No.
Yeah. That should be the episode title.
Well, no.
Bitch, please. I don't know. especially when you're dealing with something that's very adult, I don't want to see the word girl at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. That's definitely like, yeah. I guess like trends kind of matter, but that's just going too far.
Right. Kind of thing. Yeah.
Let's see. Other pet peeves. Let's see. I don't like gatekeeping. I hate when you get on a call with, you know, let's say, you know, Distiller X and three or four different PR reps all on the same call. It's like, you don't trust your representative to speak on their own. You don't need all of you to babysit. It doesn't make them look good. Yeah. It makes me feel like you don't trust me. There's just, you know, no utility.
Mm. Yeah. How about one publicist?
One is okay if you must. I'd rather just have a one-on-one conversation. I mean, I feel like a lot of what bugs me the most in the PR journalist relationship is when you just can't have a direct conversation, you know? Mm-hmm. Don't make it transactional. Just be a person. Yeah. You know, let's have a conversation. Let me talk to whoever it is who's making this product that I appreciate. Let's just have a conversation just like people. It doesn't all have to be marketing.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Really well said.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know that the PR marketing industry, you have one set of goals. We have our own set of goals as journalists, but sometimes these goals do intersect. And at the end of the day, I do think we all want the industry to succeed and we want to elevate it and lift it up. And that's really what we're trying to do all together.
Absolutely. Really well said.
I actually really like this as a segue to any shout outs that you two want to give for people or journalists, publicists, companies that are doing it right.
I received something, I had an interaction with a publicist very recently, just in the past week, that I really appreciated. As I was sort of mentioning before, the landscape has changed a little bit. It's been harder for me as a freelancer to sometimes control the subjects that I'm writing about. These days I'm commissioned to write things more than I'm actually able to pitch and write about something that I'm feeling very passionate about covering. And I sometimes get uncomfortable, and it's not the publicist's fault at all, if I'm, let's say, invited on a press trip, or if I'm invited to a place or something, and I know that I'm not going to be able to immediately cover it. And sometimes I will say, hey, I love this idea. I think I might be able to do something in the future, but I just don't know. Is it okay if I learn about this, or if I come along, or if I attend your event, but I can't give you immediate coverage right away? And I got the most thoughtful response to this idea just the other day from somebody who said, totally get it. We completely, we've seen how things are. We know how things are. We just would really like to have you as a valued person, as she actually used the word legacy, as a legacy wow. person in the cocktail community, who might be able to do something with this later and use it for future intel. It doesn't have to be something right away. We just really wanted to have this conversation with you specifically because of what you've done before and what you might be able to bring to the table later.
Wow.
And that was, I just really, really appreciated that because most of the time it's like, oh, well, you can't do anything. Well, then see ya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very personalized and authentic answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are a lot of people who get the job done really well. People who are responsive, people who don't gatekeep, yeah. people who are strategic. The thing that drives me really crazy is when you just sort of, it's like spaghetti, throwing spaghetti against the wall. You just get blobs and blobs of emails and pitches that aren't necessarily relevant to you. And you sort of multiply that times follow-ups and circle backs. And, you know, there are times when people really can be strategic. I mean, I'll call out Gia Vecchio at Foxglove, Christy Crosby at Sazerac, who brought that. I mean, there are lots of people, both in-house and agencies as well. But again, the thing that really makes people stand out to me is when they can just be strategic and straightforward. And, you know, you can't deliver on something, you know, tell me. It's not a big deal. You know, we're people.